With the legislative session underway in Albany, we're checking in with committee chairs in the state legislature about their agendas for 2021 and getting them to weigh in on some of the big issues covered by their committees. And today's guest is State Senator Jessica Ramos, a Queens Democrat who is leading the Labor Committee for a second term. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Hi, Dave. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
I'm good. It's so good to hear your voice. So in terms of your priorities as chair of the Labor Committee, what is the most pressing legislative need when it comes to the pandemic specifically?
You know, as chair of the Labor Committee, I have been monitoring very closely what the experience of essential workers has been throughout this pandemic, especially when it comes to hazard pay, or the lack thereof, I should say, and how employers are handling working conditions, whether workers are being provided with PPE. And so as we move into a COVID lens within the work of the Labor Committee, we would like to see the coronavirus be a presumption for getting sick on the job. We feel that that would help protect workers at this time. We believe that there should be an employer notification about when somebody gets sick on the job, which is a provision that now is going to be inside of the New York HERO Act, which is a bill that Senator Gennaris has introduced and I am very supportive of. We have to figure out how to provide real protections and make sure that the law is keeping up with the realities of our public health crises, in which we're in the middle of many, I'm sad to say. I'm also excited because I'd like to see more New Yorkers be able to take advantage of the unemployment insurance program here in New York. Hundreds of thousands of people were left out of the CARES Act and didn't qualify for unemployment insurance or didn't get a stimulus check. We call them excluded workers, of course. And we're looking for ways in order to get more money into more New Yorkers' pockets, all the while we continue to advocate in front of the governor for him to raise taxes on the rich, to raise taxes on billionaires, which is the only mathematical response here, I think, in addition to generating revenue in all sorts of different ways. But I digress. We want to continue, of course, fighting wage theft. We've all heard in the news about big apps like DoorDash not giving delivery workers all of their tip money. And you know that I have passed the sweat bill in the Senate now the past 2 years. The governor vetoed it the first year. The second year, it didn't pass in the assembly. We're going to do it again this year. You know, pre-pandemic statistics say that we lose $1 billion in New York State in wage theft every year. It's probably worse now. And so we need to remedy this very, very serious problem. I also want to ban captive audience meetings, which allow big companies, and notably right now, the Queens Defenders are utilizing captive audience meetings in order to force anti-union propaganda on workers during company time. So we want to make it easier for workers to have a voice on the job. We want to make it easier for workers to organize. We want to grow the labor movement and therefore the middle class. That's never been more important than right now. And that's why there's so much urgency to act. So I'm really excited for everything that we're going to be able to do in the committee this year.
Well, you mentioned workers who were denied the expanded federal unemployment benefits earlier this year. Who are those workers, and is there something that the state can do with regards to benefits for this class of workers, or is this an issue that needs to be solved down in Washington, D.C.?
So excluded workers includes people who didn't qualify for unemployment, for PUA, for the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, or for any of the stimulus checks. And that includes undocumented New Yorkers. It also includes people who were formerly incarcerated and perhaps didn't have the employment history to qualify for these programs. It includes people who depend and work inside of the cash economy, street vendors, sex workers, day laborers, domestic workers, nannies, and the like. And so we are hurting the backbone of many of our of the economy in many of our communities by not helping them. So what I'm proposing is that we tax billionaires. There's 120 billionaires in New York, more than any other place in the world, and they have a lot of money. They have more than $600 billion. In fact, they've made a nice chunk of it, about $77 billion, within the pandemic. While we've been, you know, hungry, grieving our loved ones and you know, trying to find new work, I don't think that that's fair. So the tax that I would impose on their unrealized capital gains would actually only take away a third of their profit during the pandemic. It comes up to about $23 billion. And we will be able to help thousands of families who are really hurting right now. And the billionaires will still be billionaires, will still have their luxuries, and will still have made a profit during the pandemic. And so I see this as a huge win-win for everybody and would really appreciate the governor's help in making it a reality. There's also a slew of other proposals to generate revenue in this state. And the truth is that we're behind in getting our education system good and ready for the challenges that our educators are facing and that our students deserve a higher quality of education. The MTA is in a decrepit state by our own doing, because we continue to divest away from our MTA. And so I think that as we, particularly as progressives, think about and strive towards a New York Health Act and strive to big systemic changes that we deserve, but that in reality cost money, we are going to have to really apply pressure where we need to in order to generate this revenue. We can't afford to have so many families on the brink of eviction. We can't afford to have so many New Yorkers go to sleep at night hungry, and there's no reason for it. We can reverse this trend. We can tax the rich and buy ourselves the New York that we deserve.
Well, sticking with the unemployment system, the rollout of unemployment benefits in March of 2020 was rocky, to say, I guess, the least. And you sat down with the labor commissioner for a hearing last year. And I'm curious, based on those experiences, what changes, if any, do you want to make to our state's unemployment system with regards to maybe the digital infrastructure or the way we calculate some of these benefits?
The computer system, the state computer system, is quite old. And I believe that some years ago, there was even talk about updating the computer system. I actually don't recall exactly whatever happened with that contract. We should probably look into it. But it really led to a catastrophe within the Department of Labor because it felt so overwhelmed with the amount of New Yorkers that were applying for their righteous benefit. And that shouldn't be the case. I know that the Department of Labor ended up having to increase their capacity by reallocating some of our state workers from other agencies into the Department of Labor in order to help out and process these claims at a faster rate. But I have to tell you, we still hear of New Yorkers who haven't gotten a check or who, you know, haven't been able to complete their application. And there's a lot of work to do there. We should be able to provide a better service for New Yorkers. This is, of course, a fund that employers pay into and that keeps our workers at somewhat of a solvent rate in order to keep our economy afloat during these emergencies. And really, what we are working to do is to expand just that. I would like to see part-time workers be able to take advantage of our unemployment system in a much more robust way. and I'm excited at the prospect of that happening very soon.
You and I have talked in the past about your support for extending employee benefits to New Yorkers working as independent contractors, especially for giant companies that operate third-party apps like Uber. Is there a legislative response to this issue that you're behind at this point, or is there still is this still a work in progress?
You know, many of my colleagues have their bill proposals, and I'm working very closely with many of them. Robert Jackson has a proposal. Diane Savino has a proposal. I'm working very closely with them to figure out what the best possible solution is. We, of course, want to have as clear of a bill as possible. And I've been watching what's going on in California with AB 5 and now with Prop 22 very closely. I wouldn't want to see these big money corporations come down to come over to New York to spend hundreds of millions of dollars here to convince New Yorkers of lies. And I want to see the workers have much more autonomy over their flexible schedules and their working conditions. That's what this really is about. This is about the workers. This is about gaining clarity. And I have enjoyed meeting not only with workers, but with some of these digital app companies. And I'm sure that we will be arriving at more of a solution in the weeks to come.
Do you think this is an area where you'll have a solution in a couple weeks? I mean, 2019, 2020, ideas were floated, like you mentioned, a task force was proposed by the governor, but there was, you know, nothing actually accomplished. You feel like right now there's a reason to be hopeful that something can be done?
You know, one thing that's been really clear to me is that there is no one-size-fits-all answer for all apps. All apps were not made the same. Some set wages, others act as more of a referral system. Either way, if we're looking at it from the worker perspective, we, of course, want to prioritize worker safety. So, for example, delivery workers who tend to be undocumented would prefer not to be employees. They prefer to be independent contractors. And that's something that I respect profoundly. Whereas, you know, there are apps who want their workers to stay independent contractors, but, you know, treat them more like employees by setting their wages,
right,
and telling them where to go and what to do. So it's all very complicated, and I'm lucky to be able to count on, you know, all the stakeholders involved in this endeavor, and hopefully we will provide some clarity soon enough.
Is a task force something you'd want to defer the decision-making to, or do you want this to be an issue where the legislature actually crafts something and has a very detailed plan here?
I'm not a punter. I believe that we can bring the stakeholders to the table and make serious, solid proposals for public discourse and for us to establish how the labor law should keep up with these new emerging digital economies. And that's what I plan to do. My neighbors elected me to legislate, so that is what I do.
And after a quick break, we'll have more on the labor issues facing New York with State Senate Labor Committee Chair Jessica Ramos.
Support for the Capitol Pressroom is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
We're continuing our discussion about the workforce issues in New York, and our guest is State Senate Labor Committee Chair Jessica Ramos. A state panel examining the merits of lowering the state-mandated threshold for when overtime benefits apply for farm workers opted in December not to recommend, at least for now, dropping below 60 hours a week, the threshold that took effect 1 year ago. As the co-author of the legislation that initiated this process and created the first mandated OT threshold for farm workers in New York, are you content with this decision? And if not, do you plan on getting involved legislatively in 2021?
To me, the purpose of the wage board is for them to find a pathway to 40 hours from the 60 hours that are outlined now, and for them to take into consideration all of the economic indicators of the moment. I don't think the current economic indicators are very favorable, but I am sure that the wage board will be able to, determine if that is different in the future. Hopefully we're in a different place next year and we can have a much more robust conversation about what that pathway looks like when the economy is doing better.
So does that mean the wage board will have a second chance at making recommendations that the Department of Labor could then implement?
Well, the wage board is supposed to meet every so often in order to decide whether the 60 hours moves closer to the 40 hours. So I would imagine that the next time they meet, they'll have another opportunity to look at all the information before them and decide what the appropriate action.
So then at this point, it sounds like you're okay with letting that process play out.
Yes, I'm very proud of having created the wage board in my bill, mm-hmm. Because I think it gives all the stakeholders equal footing, and they utilize data to make the best possible decision. So I want to trust the process, and hopefully it works, and hopefully soon we'll understand that the economy is doing better and that there can be a real pathway to the 40 hours.
A couple weeks ago, we had increases to the state's minimum wages implemented in the New York City suburbs and across upstate. No other increases are planned for New York City, and future decisions about increasing the minimum wage upstate will rest with the Cuomo administration. Do you think this is an issue that the legislature needs to address in 2021, or are you okay with the way the setup is going right now and the rates that are going to be the rates unless there is some sort of other change?
You know, I am right now really trying to emphasize the need to peg our minimum wages to inflation. And I've introduced legislation requiring as such. The cost of living and the price of food and of everything else that we need in order to live in New York just seems to increase every day. And that's not just during the pandemic. But, you know, of course, even before the pandemic, we know the cost of living in New York has been so high that I think thousands of New York families have actually left the state. And again, this is pre-pandemic, right? I have a cousin who, you know, wanted to buy a house, couldn't buy a house here, decided to buy a house in Connecticut instead. And it's really unfortunate. So we need folks to be able to keep up with their purchasing power. Oftentimes, employers don't regularly increase workers' wages annually, and that's what needs to change. We're talking about the jobs that are most vulnerable for immigrants, for low wages, and for dangerous working conditions. We want to avoid all that, and so hopefully. People will be able to keep up with the inflation, with the cost of things, if we peg the minimum wage to that.
Are you concerned, though, that by tying the minimum wage to annual cost of living increases, essentially, that we're not going to have that fun political process of, you know, arbitrarily deciding what the minimum wage should be every, like, 10 to 15 years when New Yorkers have the political will to do it?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's smart to remove politics from this. It shouldn't be up to the whims of, you know, of the legislature, of anybody, really. People should have the right to afford to survive. We used to say that anybody who worked full time shouldn't live in poverty, but really anybody who can work, you know, that's we're living in a different reality where, you know, many people are taking care of their elder parents, perhaps taking care of, you know, a sick relative, can only work part-time. This is why the proliferation of those digital marketplace apps and the new those new jobs is so the flexibility in schedule of those jobs is so alluring to so many people is because they need that flexibility. And so I think that we should be able to, in a world where we're producing enough food, where we actually have enough housing, where things are just not prioritized in the right way, we should push the envelope at that level and really help everybody have some peace of mind and be able to spend time with their families and actually feel happy. That, to me, is what politics should be about anyway. It should be about figuring out how we can help everyone be happy.
There are now enough Democratic senators to override a veto from the governor without any votes from your Republican colleagues. Will this dynamic make the legislative process significantly differ from 2 years ago when you had a 39-member majority? Or is the supermajority overrated when it comes to thinking about the legislature's power in Albany and your ability to pass, you know, labor-related bills?
Well, we've now had conference a few times this year, and I have to say that it's great to have many more voices in the conversation. I guess it's still not as bad as the assembly, numbers-wise, right?
Right.
But it's been really fun. It's been really interesting, especially as we build bridges across other urban parts of New York, like Syracuse and Rochester. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's premature to say whether the supermajority is anything. We'll see when it comes into play. I think here we're trying to stay as unified as possible. Our majority leader certainly is trying to organize us into figuring out how we can help New Yorkers out of the economic uncertainty that we're all in. And I'm very hopeful that together with all of our colleagues, we're going to be able to solve these issues together. And of course, working with, everyone else, all of the other stakeholders, to make sure that that we're putting forth as fair and a just recovery as we can.
And finally, you're not shy about publicly criticizing the governor. Most notably in December, you tweeted that for Christmas, he would likely get coal in his stocking. I'm curious, though, behind the scenes, what kind of working relationship do you have with him and his team on the issues you care about?
I do. I have a working relationship with some of the members of the governor's administration. And I think I've shared that I've met with the governor a few times. And we try to work together where we agree. And, in other areas, we disagree. I like to be very honest about how I feel about different issues and how things are being handled. And I would like to, where I can, offer my few cents, of course, especially from the perspective of urgency that my folks feel. Like, for example, when it comes to the vaccine distribution, so I enjoy working with the governor's office. I hope to be able to do it a lot more, we'll see what the budget cycle brings us.
He's reportedly known for his thin skin. Do you ever feel like, your comments or telling the truth has any sort of repercussions in terms of your relationship with him?
I mean, I'm not someone with very thin skin, but if that's the case, then he'll have to, that's for him to feel and decide. My job is to tell the truth like I see it, advocate for the things that my neighbors need, and to put forth my best work, my best ideas into how we can solve society's ills. That's what I see as my job, and hopefully, if anything, it helps him do his job better.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Jessica Ramos, a Queens Democrat, who is leading the Labor Committee for a second term. Senator, thank you so much for making the time.
All right. See you next time.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.